Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer, former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we explore on this particular podcast. And let's go ahead and dive right in. We've been talking about project-based learning, and this connects to PBL, but it's also more about creativity in general. And it's this idea of the seven ways to inspire divergent thinking in the classroom. And I'm gonna start out with a story, my own story, from when I was a kid. When I was a kid, my twin brother and I loved watching this show called American Gladiators. I was a child of the 80s. You've probably seen it before. You remember Lace and Zap and Blaze and Ice and all the other characters whose names either sounded like street drugs or onomatopoeia. For what it's worth, they never really had like a character named Cannabis, probably because he would just be like doing nothing and eating Jack in the Box. But anyway, we loved this show, American Gladiators. I mean, we were super, super into it, my brother and I. And over time, we became more and more inspired to create our own American Gladiator show at home. So we spent a whole day sketching out our plans for how we would actually make this happen. Unfortunately, we didn't have the right materials. We didn't have the wood, pipes, or padding needed to make a true gladiator course. But we did have a baseball bat and some puffy old slippers, some duct tape. And all of this proved to be perfect for recreating the jousting game. Next, we discussed the ideal location for building a platform. Initially, we decided to use the swing set, and then we would build a foam pit. But it turned out you actually need to have foam for a foam pit, and we didn't have that. So we jotted down ideas and more ideas and more ideas before we finally landed on our bunk bed. We didn't even have to do it outside. We could keep this sport inside in our shared bedroom. We stacked out the two box springs and mattresses right on top of each other, and we put them on the floor. And then we stood on the top bunk, right? Just standing at the very top, our heads almost touching the ceiling at that point. And we played our American Gladiator game. And I'm telling you, it was epic. We spent hours playing our game, adding slight variations on it, and eventually hacking the rules to make it less and less like American Gladiators and more like the Spencer Twins Gladiator extravaganza. Looking back on it, I'm not sure if we ever asked permission. My parents were never really the helicopter type anyway. And we did have one moment where it didn't work properly, where my brother took a cheap shot and I busted the light bulb on our ceiling fan and glass went everywhere. Or, I don't know, maybe I was the one who took the cheap shot on him. My memory is a little bit fuzzy about that particular detail. Although we didn't realize it at the time, something powerful was happening when we invented our American Gladiator game. We were developing divergent thinking. It's the same thing that happened when we grabbed whatever random household objects we could find and we started making up our own musical instruments. And in both cases, we started with a bold idea and a lack of supplies. However, this creative constraint pushed us to hack the objects all around us and to solve problems and create something unusual. At the time, it wasn't a big deal. We were just playing. But this type of divergent thinking has turned out to be a vital skill that my brother and I both use now in our jobs as adults. Apparently, that's what happens when you're trying your hardest as a kid to be Nitro from American Gladiators. So I want to talk about this need for divergent thinking. See, in the past, students could depend on a simple formula. I've mentioned this before, right? This was the formula. Do well in school, get a good degree from a university, and climb the corporate ladder. That was the formula that worked perfectly for my dad when he was a kid, and it seems like a great idea. But the thing is this, the ladder is gone, and in its place is a maze. The reality is, our students are going to walk into a tumultuous economy. There's going to be automation and artificial intelligence, and all of those things are going to make it harder and harder for them to climb the ladder. Our students will have to think like entrepreneurs, even if they aren't entrepreneurs. They'll have to be creative thinkers and innovators and problem solvers. And in the future, our students are going to have to be nimble. They'll have to know how to experiment and iterate and pivot. And this is where divergent thinking becomes so critical. Divergent thinking is what allows students to make connections between seemingly random ideas. And in the process, they find innovative solutions by looking at things from different angles and finding inspiration from surprising contexts. Here, students learn how to hack items in unexpected ways. They learn how to combine two seemingly unrelated ideas. They learn how to take an idea from one context to the other context. And all of that is what it means to think divergently. As we move further and further into automation and into artificial intelligence, our students will need to be divergent thinkers. They may or may not enter the creative economy, but they will need to be creative in whatever segment of the economy they're in. They'll have to solve complex problems. And the thing is, we see this all the time, that artificial intelligence is all about this idea of patterns and algorithms, but they're going to have to think outside of the algorithm and outside of the pattern. It's the one thing that they can do that honestly machines won't be able to do in the future. So with that in mind, let's think about this. How do we help students to develop divergent thinking? Here are a few ideas. Number one, use multiple types of divergent thinking. You can use divergent thinking activities as quick warm-ups to activate creativity or as brain breaks in the middle of a more analytical task. And these activities are short. They can take 5-10 minutes tops. In some cases, you might do a visual divergent thinking activity. You can show students a semi-abstract drawing and then ask them to generate a list of possible ideas. Other times you might present students with two or three objects and ask them to generate a list of everything that they could make with them. And I want to point out that each of these is a different type of divergent thinking. Another version is to do a language-based one where students have to change one letter in a sports team and they come up with something new. So you end up with the Pittsburgh Pirates becoming the Pittsburgh Pilates, the Phoenix Suns can become the Phoenix Nuns, the Chicago Bears become the Chicago Bears, the LA Lakers become the LA Fakers, and so on and so forth. And so again, you have this one that's where they're looking at a visual, one where they're looking at objects, another where they're looking at words, but in each case, they are doing divergent thinking and they're coming up with new possibilities. If you have a longer amount of time, though, if you have 60 to 90 minutes, you can actually do a full divergent thinking challenge. And if you go to this particular blog post, it's spencerauthor.com/divergent thinking, all in one word. You'll notice that there's a place where you can download that sort of what can you make with it divergent thinking challenge. So number two is to embrace creative constraint. Although you can do divergent thinking exercises, it helps to integrate divergent thinking into the entire project-based learning process. And one of the key areas is through this idea of creative constraint. Divergent thinking thrives when you are faced with limitations. It pushes you to think divergently because you have to use limited resources or a limited amount of time or whatever. And this is the core idea of creative constraint. When you have fewer resources, you have to find new ways to use the existing resources you have. I remember a time when we went to the beach without any lawn chairs or toys. And our kids at first were frustrated with us for not bringing enough. But then it didn't take long for them to start inventing their own games. And when they got tired, they created their own sand chairs with cup holders and they sculpted it with the sand. Suddenly the environment itself had shifted from a location to a design element. Now, as educators, we can incorporate the same kind of creative constraint in different ways. One option is to limit the time through rapid prototyping. You might have students do a quick maker challenge that's timed. You might have them move through iterations quickly. It might be something that's more language related, like a free write, where students just get their words out and it pushes them to think divergently. When this happens, students grow less risk averse in their creativity, but they're also developing this creative fluency where they're able to plan, implement, and revise work quickly and with a sense of agency and control. Other times you might limit the options of materials. I remember when I did whiteboard videos with students, they had to use the whiteboard and nothing else. And they had to sketch it out. They couldn't download any pictures or anything like that. And their end product had to be 30 seconds or less. Instead of limiting creativity, these constraints actually push students to think divergently. We often hear the term think inside the box, but divergent thinking says think differently about the box, repurpose the box. And I love that idea. Number three, incorporate play. There's a fascinating longitudinal study where they look at it and say, and they basically realize that 90% of kindergartners rank in the genius level for divergent thinking. Within 5 years, that number drops to about 50% and then has a steep decline as they get closer and closer to adulthood. To me, that's kind of sad. Now, some of this could be the result of human development. I get that. But I think there's something else at work. Divergent thinking thrives when people play. It turns out there's a fascinating research link between playfulness and divergent thinking. You can check out the research. It is fascinating. But what they realized is that basically, the more you play, the more you think divergently. And the researchers defined play as physical, social, and cognitive spontaneity, manifest joy, and a sense of humor. Again, I love the fact that they have to define what play is. But to me, that's what kids do, right? That's what they do really, really well. I remember last year when we had this massive snowstorm and they had to cancel school. Oh, okay. All right. Let me rephrase that. By massive snowstorm, I actually mean we had a few inches of snow. I mean, this is Western Oregon, about an hour outside of Portland, after all. And we don't know what to do with snow. When it snows, everything shuts down. So our kids had a full week off from school, and they started making snow angels and snowmen and snow werewolves and snow ninjas and snow unicorns and everything else. But eventually, these hours in the snow led to curiosity. And my oldest son asked what would melt the snow the fastest. From there, he tested every chemical imaginable and eventually designed his own de-icer with rubbing alcohol. Now, what began as play led to divergent thinking and ultimately creativity. Now, I get it. This can be hard to pull off in school. I mean, how do we do that? We have tight curriculum maps and limited time, but this is where teachers can find ways to incorporate play and humor and joy into their curriculum. And they can create moments when students are able to think divergently. Take humor. It takes no extra effort, but it's a simple way to model this creative risk-taking and divergent thinking. But if you want to spend a little more time, I think it's kind of fun to do sort of a play-oriented Maker Monday challenge. Again, there's a link on this particular blog post where you can check out the Maker Monday challenge, but it's just one of the ways that you can get students engaged in playful creativity. Number four is to use divergent thinking when you're stuck. I love this thing from Pixar. They call it rule number 9, and this is what it reads. When you're stuck, make a list of what you, let me rephrase this. When you're stuck, make a list of what wouldn't happen next. And this is when you're stuck inside of a plot idea. Lots of times the material to get you unstuck will show up in that list. I love that. By generating a list of bad ideas, you end up thinking divergently. you come up with random ideas that get you past the initial mental block, which can often then lead to innovation. Going back to my American Gladiator story, my brother and I took an inventory of every single item we had that might be used to knock someone down. I mean, we came up with a huge list. And our initial bad idea was the baseball bat. I mean, the baseball bat is way too dangerous. And there's no way my parents, even if they're not helicopter parents, there's no way they would let us hit each other with baseball bats. But then we start to think about what we could add to the baseball bat to make it less dangerous. And we started with pillows, and then we thought about cotton and all t-shirts. And finally, we realized that the fluffy slippers were actually perfect for this. Divergent thinking was exactly what we needed to get unstuck. We had to wade through the bad ideas to figure out which bad idea was actually good. You probably notice times in the classroom when students seem to hit a creative wall. They get disengaged, they seem off task, you see exactly what it's like, right? And often what seems like disinterest or off task behavior is just fear. They're afraid. I mean, they're scared of doing things the wrong way, scared of people might not like their work. And maybe it's less about fear or more just a general uncertainty about where to go next. They've just hit a creative block. And when you ask them to list bad ideas, to engage in this one divergent thinking activity, you actually reduce the fear and help them turn off that overly analytical mind that often squashes really good ideas. Number five, celebrate risk-taking. Our educational system tends to focus on getting the right answer and getting it quickly. But divergent thinking is different. It's all about taking creative risks. Every time you choose to use an object in a different way or connect ideas that seem disconnected, you are taking a creative risk. And as a leader in your classroom, you can develop this culture that embraces creative risk taking. I used to work with this teacher who would ask students to share their epic fails with their classmate. Students would say, use this sentence stem. I took a creative risk by blank. It didn't work, but I learned blank, and I loved it. Now, they didn't, I'm not entirely sure that that was the sentence stem, but you get the idea. That's basically what they were sharing. And then the whole class would cheer afterwards. His students were unafraid. And as a result, they were actually more likely to think divergently. Now, you would imagine that they would be a classroom that's accepting mediocrity or having low standards or whatever, but that's not what happened. They actually ended up creating better work and working harder because they weren't afraid. And this also requires changes in how we do assessment. We can't say, I want you to think divergently, but then use this one-size-fits-all, high-stakes approach to things like assessment and grading. This will make our students risk-averse. Instead, we have to take a mastery-based approach where students have the chance to resubmit their work, where you don't give zeros, where you give them chances to redo stuff. And that is ultimately, it has to change at the assessment level as well. All right, so I want to add one more point to this right here, this idea of celebrating risk-taking. I think it's also important that we model risk-taking as educators. I actually think creative risk-taking is important for us to do in our own practice. When we choose to design projects despite the tight curriculum maps or the limited time frames and a lack of adequate technology, we're modeling divergent thinking for our students. There's no guarantee that it will work, but that's the point. You're showing that you're willing to try something new, even if there is no guarantee that it'll work. And when we choose to say, I'm going to try something different, I'm going to innovate, I am going to hack the curriculum map, we end up modeling the kind of creative risk-taking we want to see in our students. And the thing is this, they are watching. They see the constraints we're faced with. They know it. But they also see us modeling that risk-taking and thinking divergently when we choose to be different. Number six, chase your curiosity. So Dyson vacuum cleaners had a huge creative breakthrough when they studied sawmills. a conference struggling to get people to show up to sessions on time, reconfigured their approach after looking at train schedules. An automotive company created user-friendly consoles after applying design principles from video gaming systems. Now, these are all examples of cross-industry innovation, and they're examples I found from this short book called Not Invented Here. I absolutely love that book, and it's an example of how divergent thinking often works. Often when people leave their echo chambers in their own industry or discipline or whatever, they become inspired by seemingly unrelated fields. For example, it's no wonder that Darwin was a geologist rather than a biologist. He needed an outside perspective to transform the understanding of the origins of life. And this is part of divergent thinking. You apply ideas and approaches from one domain into a seemingly unrelated context. And along the way, you end up thinking divergently. Now, to me, this requires almost a nonsensical curiosity. So in order to be able to do that, to apply lessons from other industries, you have to be willing to geek out on things that you find fascinating, even if they seem impractical or unrelated to what you're learning. And this is the whole idea of our Wonder Day projects. Now, I'm not going to get into it too much, but a Wonder Day project is anywhere from 1 day to 5 days. There's Wonder Day, there's Wonder Week. Again, you can download this from looking at the blog. And it's basically a chance for students to go fully inquiry-based, where they just ask a question and they pursue it and they run with it and they answer it on their own. All right, final idea. This is one that I'm still not entirely sure what it looks like in school, but here's the idea. You need to be bored. I know that's a little bit weird, but trust me, you need to be bored. I'm not entirely sure what to do with it, but in a study conducted by Sandy Mann and Rebecca Cadman, participants had to copy names from a phone book. So they just were writing down all these different names that were in a phone book. And these weren't like cool names from a phone book. These weren't like fantasy names. There was no Dumbledore or Flitwick or anything like that. This was just a standard phone book, you know, the kind that like nobody uses anymore. And participants copied the names from the phone book. And when they were done, they had to do a divergent thinking exercise. And the fascinating thing is that the board group scored higher in divergent thinking, vastly higher than the control group. They later modified this study by having participants read the phone book instead of writing out the names. And they scored even better on both a higher rate of boredom and they were more successful in divergent thinking exercises. And I think this is interesting because you see the same thing with Neil Gaiman. He has this process that he describes for deliberately making himself bored when he writes. And here's how he describes it. He says this, "I think it's about where ideas come from. They come from daydreaming, from drifting, that moment you're just sitting there. The trouble with these days is that it's really hard to get bored. I have 2.4 million people on Twitter who will entertain me at any moment. It's really hard to get bored. I'm much better at putting my phone away, going for boring walks, actually trying to find the space to get bored in." That's what I've started to say to people who say, "I want to be a writer." I say, "Great, get bored." Now, as a professor, I admit this, I don't want to be boring. I want class to be fun and fascinating. I pride myself on keeping things interesting, on having humor and having a good pace. But what if boredom is actually a good thing? I mean, what if boredom is actually a gift? Or maybe not maybe not a gift. Maybe it's more like a discipline that you have to cultivate. It's no accident that great ideas happen when you're in the shower or while you're doing the dishes, although you should never be doing both of those at the same time. See, we need boredom in order to make connections between these unrelated ideas. Now, for what it's worth, I don't want students to be bored in school. That's not my goal. I think there's already too much boredom in school in general. But I think there are ways we can incorporate these elements of boredom in order to boost divergent thinking. For example, at the elementary level, we can have moments in a project where the whole class just goes for a walk. that's an example of this sort of space, of this decompression, of this boredom. And this might sound like a waste of time, but there's a fascinating Stanford study demonstrating how 30-minute walks increased performance on divergent thinking tasks. Another option might be to create moments where students can work for a longer amount of time on a task completely free of distraction. But I also think it's a little bit more than that. I think it's sometimes telling students that, yes, creative work is going to get boring. There's going to be parts of it that are not fun, parts that are tedious, and that's okay. That's part of what leads to those creative breakthroughs. That's also necessary. So there you have it. Those are 7 different ideas for how we can boost divergent thinking in the classroom. All right. Thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. Real quick request, would you leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher? That would mean the world to me. So thank you for listening. Have an awesome day and go out and make something awesome.